You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Justin Deschamps. Justin is the author and editor of the blog Stillness in the Storm. The Stillness in the Storm show and blog is an ongoing conversation about world events, hidden truths, and empowering information, how our thoughts, emotions, and actions mold our collective reality. A different perspective on mainstream news, practical knowledge, news on health and wellness, alternative history, science, law, and much more. Justin is also involved with the subject of disclosure and the exposure of the hidden system of control and domination, which is often referred to as the Matrix. His blog covers a vast range of underground subjects, which he provides links for to research the topics personally. In my opinion, it's one of the best blogs available today. So let's welcome him to the show now. Hi, Justin. How are you?
Hey there, Lance. Good to be here.
Good. Well, we didn't get our little pre-show chat, but that's all right. I feel like I know you already after reading so many of your blogs.
Right. Yeah. And you and I have been chatting via the interwebs on Facebook and whatnot for, seems like years now. So.
Yes. I thought maybe we could start in a traditional fashion. And because I don't know the story, and I've never heard it from you, but I'm kind of curious how your path merged with Julian's to create Stillness in the Storm, and what was the spiritual journey that drew you to create that venue?
Sure. Wow. That is a great question. Let's see. Well, I'll give you the quickest version I possibly can.
Okay.
Basically, really early on in life, I just felt really driven to learn and educate myself about things. And I seemed to have a good ability to do that. And I was fortunate to have parents who would spend long hours talking to me about all sorts of things and feeding my curiosity. And then eventually, I got into physics and psychology and things like this, and went to school for physics. Didn't end up graduating, but I learned a bunch there. And many years later, I ended up meeting Julian when I was 27. And it was a major transition in my life. I had been an atheist for most of my life. I was going to the Church of Science. And, kind of a devout follower in that realm. And then after Julian and I worked together for about a year, he came to me and said he had this documentary he found called The Gerson Miracle. And it was all about curing cancer with juicing. And at the time, I didn't think that was even possible. And I thought I kind of knew it all about when it came to science and things. So So I said, okay, well, let's watch this, Julian. Let's see what this is all about. And I was pretty skeptical, but as the movie's unfolding and it's presenting the information, my science mind is, recognizing the merit behind what is being described. But my kind of my dogma is saying, well, wait a minute, if these cures for cancer actually exist, I would know about it. I'd hear about it on the news. We would have all these problems. And so as you can imagine, that was kind of like a big existential crisis for me. And I ended up buying the book and did a whole bunch of research. I was just diving right into it. That's kind of been my MO from the beginning, is if I don't understand something, I get right into it and I try to figure out what's going on. And at the end of about a 2-month process, I ended up, instead of disproving it, I ended up proving it to myself. And then once that happened, a whole other rabbit hole began, which is, well, Jesus, if they're lying about cancer, and 500,000 people die every year in the United States alone from cancer. What else are they lying about, and what else is
happening? Yes, exactly.
So then, you know, to cut a kind of a very long story short here, after about another year or so of that, Julian and I got into a whole bunch of different topics. I ended up reading about spirituality and the Urantia book and Law of One and Walter Russell and Conversation with God, and got into law and a few years after that. And basically, in 2013, a friend of mine, kind of somebody who I was mentoring me through the awakening process, said, you know, you guys should really start a radio show and start talking about some of these things that you're passionate about. And we started Stillness in the Storm in March of 2013. And then, in July, we started the blog of that year. And from there, it just kind of exploded. And it was just a really great outlet for us to share what we had been learning. But really, our goal in the beginning was, and still to this day, is to try to have a dialogue. You know, a lot of times it's about, you know, hey, I found some truths and here, you should believe these and don't question me. But I didn't really feel like that was a fair way to approach it. And I wanted to try to, as best as I could, present information, but then also have a dialogue with the audience so they could share the insights that they get with me, and I could learn and they could learn and we could all improve each other. So that's the answer to that.
Wow. Well, so the radio show preceded the blog, yes?
Correct.
And where is your radio show? Is it on YouTube?
If you go to my website, stillnessinthestorm.com, there's a section called Radio Show Archives.
Okay.
And scroll down to the bottom. The first about year or so of shows were on Blog Talk, and those archives are on there, although I believe the original station, Soul Talk Radio, no longer has it up. So I'm pretty sure the archive is still available, but that's where most of the older shows are. And then some of the newer things that I've been doing are also on that section. But I don't have an official station or anything that I'm with.
Okay, good. I just wanted to make sure that everybody could find that who wants to get involved with your radio show as well.
Thank you.
So, I am guessing that the process of the blog and the research was an organic one. I know it was like that for me with the radio show. It was kind of, a process of discovery and research and, as you said, uncovering things and then going deeper down the rabbit hole and then, like you said, if this is not true, then how much else is not true? And pretty soon you find out that there's very little that's accurate.
Right.
That, this is a world that is an illusion. And so how do you choose and research the topics for your readers? Because I get your daily blog, and there's some excellent topics that you bring forth. And I really like that you also provide links that are to validate for research purposes, and they're different sources. So it's not all a self-circulating validation. You can go to these different sources and see that they're and make those decisions for yourself.
Precisely. Yeah. There's, as far as topics, like how do I choose, really everything kind of falls under the umbrella of truth seeking. And so anything that I happen to take a personal interest in or I think is important that needs to be shared, I'll usually find some way to express that. I do my own writing and things, but that takes a lot of time to do in comparison to finding other topics. So usually my modus operandi, my MO is to peruse other sites, other sources of information. If there's already a really nice message or a really nice presentation on a topic, I'll present that where I don't necessarily have to write it up myself. But then if I feel like there isn't necessarily a perspective shared anywhere, then I'll take on that burden or that opportunity to share it. But as far as topics, I mean, I'm really trying to give people the tools they can and the information they need to improve their lives at all levels, whether it's health internally, like psychology and spirituality, or in a social setting like law and contracts and things like this, or big picture, like, you know, what's the cosmology? How does my life relate to the big picture of things? Mm-hmm. So really, I feel like I'm trying to get as many topics as I can that people are interested in. And then another thing I do is I'll take a single topic, like health, for example, and I'll try to unpack it in a way that shows that it can be seen from a big picture perspective and also the nuts and bolts perspective. So that's that kind of is my what I'm trying to do is weave and create a tapestry of understanding and show that really the truth is all part of this grand puzzle. And if we look at it that way, then we can gain a lot of insights and things that we may not necessarily think are connected, but actually are.
Oh, yes, absolutely right. everything is interconnected. And at the quantum level, of course, that's literal. And so I began putting the pieces of the puzzle together and seeing that there is nothing that isn't a puzzle piece. That you may not know where it fits, but gradually you can begin to see the picture that's being formed by the puzzle. And so, you know, eventually we do get enough pieces to figure some things out. But there is always another door that opens, and there is a larger and more vast field of information that we were unaware of or didn't know about. And I think that there probably is so much that has been concealed and kept secret and hidden that it were it to all come out, it would be like an avalanche of information that would be so shocking that people would just, we wouldn't be able to handle it very well.
Right. Yeah, I remember in my beginning, it was about 2011, and I started a job at AOL Tech Support, believe it or not. And this was like about a year after I had started my awakening, so it was really gung-ho, and I thought I could, you know, download somebody in 5 minutes and completely transform them, and, you know, they'd walk away and be like, yes, I'm completely awake now, everything's great. Well, as you can imagine, that didn't work out so well, but one thing I learned is that in sharing information with people, it really requires, you know, trust and vulnerability and rapport, that in order to for somebody to give you access to their mind space, which is the thing that they use to interpret the world and their experience, they have to trust you. And a lot of people aren't necessarily going to be open to information. So I realized at that point that I needed to come at it at a different approach. Instead of trying to put my core nuggets of truth out there that I think are the most important, I still do that, but I also find other outlets so I could speak to a particular issue through talking about health or talking about law or talking about emotions and psychology and whatnot. So there's a whole lot that can be woven, and it's like different paths up the mountain. You know, there may be a million, an infinite number of paths up the mountain, but there's only one destination, and we're all getting there at our own pace.
Nice. I'd like to ask you something on a personal level that, you know, you can say as much or as little about as you like.
Sure.
But I know that you and Julian worked on Stillness in the Storm for quite a few years, and I am not fully aware of what happened to him when he crossed over.
Sure.
Can you talk about that a little bit and share that moment with us?
Yeah, absolutely. Julian and I started the blog, as I mentioned, in 2013. We, at the end of that year, we traveled to Morocco, and we spent a year and 3 months there. And Julian, he's a full-blood Puerto Rican, and in his particular family, the members of that family that came over to the United States have health issues related to the American-style diet. And this is something he was struggling with for years. He had done his best to try to change his diet, and he had and gotten a lot of strides, but in Morocco, he ended up developing blood clots in his legs. unfortunately. Oh. Yeah, and we got those treated. He actually went on a natural course, and he got those taken care of, which was wonderful. But then when we came back, you know, we came back to the United States, some kind of old habits kicked in, and we had some of my favorite foods that we hadn't had in a long time, and then he had a relapse. And we didn't really fully realize how serious it was until about 3 weeks before he passed. So we started to go to the hospital, and I mean, without going into all the details, it was essentially a case of medical error where the medical institution just refused to consider his history and what we thought it was. We had mentioned multiple times to the medical doctors in their emergency rooms and things, you know, listen, Julian's got a history of blood clots. I'm pretty sure there's something going on here. Mm-hmm. And they didn't want to hear it. He had some issues with his lungs. He had a really hard time breathing. And I knew, and my intuition was telling me that there's something else happening, but they refused. And then by the time we actually got them to look at it, it was kind of already too late. And he ended up passing away after they had finally recognized the fact that, yes, he had blood clots in his lungs. His lungs were almost two-thirds filled with blood clots. Mm. And from a, you know, a human perspective, this was obviously very devastating. You know, somebody that mm-hmm. not only love as a on a personal level because we were partners, but somebody that was my partner in life, that we were doing this work together, it was huge. But at the same time, and you know, I don't know if it's because of the spiritual work I had done beforehand, but I was able to, within about a week of him transitioning, realize that this was actually this amazing gift that he had given me, because I had never really had a death experience before. Mm. And what ended up happening is, as he transitioned, he became like this, the best way I can describe it is like a saint to me. Like, I mean, I loved him before, don't get me wrong, mm-hmm. but the level of love and appreciation and just connection that I feel now that he's on the other side is just so amazingly transformative. I mean, it's to this day, it sends shivers up my spine because I have such a greater appreciation and affection for him. And now I never really feared death before, but now I completely don't fear death because I realize it's just a step in the road. So,
right, right. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
What was Julian like? Because I kind of came into the scene after he had passed.
Sure.
Can you just give us a thumbnail sketch?
Yeah, yeah. Well, Julian was a very passionate person. He was artistic, very emotionally driven, very intuitive. He had many out-of-body experiences. And he was very family-oriented. He had a brother and sister that he cared deeply about, and his grandmother. And he always made it a point to try to talk with them and share with them. And he was a very humble guy, too. Like, he knew a lot, but you wouldn't know it by talking to him unless you asked certain questions. And then he would kind of open up. But he wouldn't necessarily be somebody that would, you know, badger you with his truth or try to preach mm-hmm. to you or anything. Mm-hmm. So, but then at the same time, because of his kind of his past, he also had like a lot of emotions and things that he was processing, as we all do. Mm. And, you know, and I think part of what he was going through at a spiritual level was dealing with and experiencing a side of life on this world that a lot of people deal with, is just that, you know, being raised in the world that we're raised in, it's, you know, trauma and life issues and problems are just piled on top of each other. And that can really stifle you and crush you at a soul level. But I don't know if it was because we found each other or if Julian was already on this trajectory, but one thing that I really admired about him was his ability to be at the depths of a really horrible situation emotionally and personally, and then, you know, pull himself out of it and still have a really positive outlook and pour that energy into the work.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, he sounds like an amazing person, and I just wanted to get a feel for him. And I appreciate you taking us down that road for a moment.
Yeah, my pleasure.
because I know that he contributed quite a lot to our awareness and our knowledge, and I just have the sense of him that he was quite creative and a very, I don't know, a strong individual.
He was. He was incredibly strong. I remember we were in Morocco, and the local police were coming by, and they wanted to examine our passports.
Mm.
It wasn't a situation where we were being harassed, but they were kind of like testing us to see what they could do to get us to comply. And
mm-hmm.
he just did not want to have anything to do with it. He says, listen, if you're accusing me of something, if you have a valid reason for wanting my password information, I'll be happy to give it to you. But until then, I am not playing this game. So
I love it.
Yeah, he was a spiritual warrior. And as a matter of fact, that, you know, just kind of an aside in his creative side, he was very in tune with symbolism and seeing how archetypes and consciousness worked through symbolism. So a lot of the imagery wow. that you see on stillness, the color schemes,
uh-huh.
the layout, was all of his kind of his genesis. And he did that with a very big intention of trying to use the imagery that we were producing on stillness to activate our consciousness at a more subtle, like intuitive and creative level.
Wow. Well, I'm sure that his loss was felt on many levels, and I am so thankful that you decided to continue to carry the torch and continue producing the blog. It must have been kind of difficult to pick up pieces that you were not accustomed to be doing. Was there a transition time that you experienced?
Oh, certainly. I mean, the work we were doing before the blog really kind of took off in 2015, and it became a full-time job for both of us. We were both putting in about 10 hours of work a day, and then obviously when he transitioned, it was just me. So I had to like frantically figure out, well, how am I gonna do everything we did before. And he was, like I said, he was creating images. He was helping me edit things. He was giving me insights on, you know, hey, well, maybe you could say this better, or, you know, that kind of thing, creative help with that. So what I had to kind of do was have this moment of kind of going into the cocoon and figuring out, okay, well, while I'm also processing the loss of my partner, how am I going to face, you know, am I going to still do the work? And one thing that I learned really early on in my awakening is being true to myself and transparent. And I spent many years in the closet, and I was trying to hide my sexuality from the world, and that almost killed me. And I ended up developing a really nasty drug problem because of that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm familiar with that. I did the same thing.
Yeah, I know. It seems to be a common theme these days. Where was I going with this? Oh yeah, so what I kind of had this moment while it was actually the first night that he had gone, and I was trying to figure out how to process this, and I decided I wanted to process this openly, and I decided to just kind of like pour my heart out in a blog post, and then I wrote a subsequent one later, and that really was tremendously healing for me. I mean, I don't want to downplay the impact of it, but I got most of my emotional and spiritual healing work from that loss fairly well taken care of within the first week or so. And then I just, because of that, I don't know if it was him guiding me through the other side or what, but I felt just incredible passion and energy to continue to do the work. And I just kept doing it, and that's where we are at today.
Wow. Wow. Well, I am so happy that you were able to take that path, and it does feel like he, in a way, it feels like he's with us now. There's an interesting feeling, I just see this face smiling and beaming and just extremely happy at this conversation.
Yes, I'm sure he's smiling ear to ear right now.
So, yes, and the work you do is so important because, you know, having started in internet radio about 10 or 11 years ago, I was researching things that I was interested in, and, of course, that changed a lot. But as 2012 approached, I did a lot of work on discovering more about the Mayan prophecies and talking to people that knew more about it than I did, Carl Kalaman and Barbara Ann Clough and a few others. And so I was kind of thrown into this New Age whirlwind. I threw myself into it. And the whirlwind has kind of died down, but there are other tornadoes on the horizon. And they're of a completely different making, and they are quite ominous.
Yeah.
And, I wanted to know as much as I could know, and I had some kind of communication with some beings that were hovering over me, and I insisted that if I was going to continue on, that I would be given information and know what I needed to know. And they agreed to that, and so I have found out a lot of things intuitively. And now I'm just kind of backing off a little bit because I can see why people don't want to know about chemtrails and vaccinations and 9/11 and all the world wars and the Great Depression and everything else that's been created, the false flags, and everything that's been done on this planet that has been manufactured for a multitude of results that work on different levels.
Right.
And I guess that kind of segues into something that is one of my pet peeves that I've known about for quite some time, and many of my guests have shared about, and that is the breakaway civilization and the secret space program. And as I understand it, this is just a snapshot, but the Nazi scientists were brought over from Germany through Project Paperclip, and most people know this already because it's common knowledge. And the CIA was instrumental in clearing all their records and installing them in positions that were important and in high places. And the head of NASA, Wernher von Braun, was one example. And I think that we had something like 5,000. So the war didn't really end. It just kind of went underground, and so did the scientists, and they were here. They are here, and they have been infiltrating and working with corporations and secreting information away, and that's just one of many groups that are working in a kind of vacuum that we are not allowed to know about. You know, like the base on Mars, which Laura Eisenhower talks about, and the base on the moon, and, I mean, there's just free energy having been discovered decades ago, possibly during the Nazi research. They're quite brilliant research. And, of course, Tesla's information being relegated to the dustbin by J.P. Morgan because they couldn't make money off of it, and they had copper wire, and they needed to meter the utilities. So Tesla was marginalized, and when he died, everything was taken, and it was used in the corporate world, which is really the above the government. And, you know, operates in kind of a shadow government position.
Right.
So it's an interesting world, and all of these things work together. And I mention this because I know that you talk about these things, And thank goodness, you know, you have a wonderful way of presenting the information and keeping it balanced and giving people links to research for themselves. And it's a very positive and empowering thing that you're doing with Stillness in the Storm.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I mean, part of my MO is that, you know, despite all of the horrible stuff that's happening out there that I don't think we should try to shy away from, but we kind of need to shine that light into those dark places. There's still a positive outlook at the end of it. And that's kind of a conclusion I've come to in my own spiritual practices, realizing that all of this darkness that we have around us is actually an opportunity for us as individuals to overcome that darkness through transmutation and in that process evolve spiritually and actually grow as children of the Creator. So yeah, and I really try to, as best as I can, be unbiased and present the information, but at the same time I also have an opinion and I don't mind expressing that either. So
right, I'm very similar to you in that way. I know one of the questions I wanted to ask you was, from all of your research and the stories that you've worked on, and I know that you were recently involved with a disclosure event in, where was it held? Anyway, it was held in a desert, right?
yeah, the contact in the desert?
Yes. I wanted to ask you what you felt personally were some of the most important topics that we should be hearing about or knowing about today.
Insofar as like ufology and disclosure type stuff?
Everything.
Everything. Oh boy, okay.
In other words, well, if you took everything that you knew and you graded it in a scale of, you know, say 1 to 1,000, what do you think is the most crucial or vital? What are the most vital elements that probably most people are unaware of that would be useful if we were aware of it?
I would say, I would say the topics that are the most pertinent, like if everybody could completely understand these topics, we could very quickly transform ourselves and transform the world. I would say that knowledge of self via psychology is very important. Knowledge of how the universe works, which is natural law and divine law, and then how we apply those laws in a social context is using positive law, or what could be called contract law. And then from there, philosophy. And philosophy is kind of like the science of being. So it's interesting because those topics are usually the ones that most people, you know, they don't necessarily have an interest in because they're not as shiny and flashy.
Right.
But really, I mean, that those are some of the most crucially important things to understand. Because if you don't know yourself, then it's going to be very difficult for you to navigate the world, and you might end up misperceiving something, and that happens all the time. And then if you don't know the law, if you don't understand that there are actually laws that manage existence and have managed existence from the beginning, and they've never changed, well, when you actually understand what those rules of the game are, then you can play the game much better. And this is where the philosophy comes in. And the philosophy, I think, is incredibly important because the philosophic structure that you use to organize your reality is the thing that, you know, we like to say that we create our reality. And what you could even say is your philosophy creates your reality. Because if you believe that, for example, the universe is this horrible place where there's this really evil, bitter God in the sky that has forsaken you and there's original sin and all this, well, that philosophy is not going to give you a positive outlook on the world. That's going to, that philosophy is going to be an umbrella around everything you do. So ever actually go deep into your beingness and start to pull apart that substructure and ask these questions like, well, why do I believe these things? Then the filter that you use to organize your life and motivate yourself and figure out what your goals are is not going to be advantageous.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Well, I did something silly when I was younger. I read a book by P.D. Ouspensky, The Fourth Way, and one by George Gurdjieff, and it was Meetings with Remarkable Men. And from reading those two books, I decided that I needed to be in an esoteric school. So I found one, and I admonished people to use more care in choosing an esoteric school than they would in buying a pound of butter at the grocery store.
Right.
But it was a positive experience, and it was all about self-awareness and self-study and what we actually are and how we can become more conscious if indeed we are not fully conscious at this point. So it was quite a wonderful foundation for me. But I don't think most people have that kind of foundation, and with a lack of that, it seems that what most people are able to pick up is the propaganda that is so readily accessible.
Right.
And unfortunately, we are not really thinking for ourselves very clearly at this point, and we don't have enough information to make choices. So that seems to be one of the problems that needs to be addressed.
Exactly. Yeah. There's so much. We've been bathed in various forms of social engineering and mind control and manipulation and trauma-based mind control. And I mean, there's so many layers of mind manipulation happening that, if you're trying to solve some of these problems and you haven't looked at that big one, then you may be spinning your wheels or getting frustrated. And I kind of see that in a lot of places. I mean, right now, especially in the truth movement, there's a lot of division, and arguably there always has been. But a lot from what I've been learning about psychology and things and being able to look at it from that perspective, I can see that a lot of times what's happening is people are getting triggered by one thing or another, and their emotions have been weaponized against them. And this is a trick that the cabal have been playing for thousands of years. One thing I've been learning about is the developmental psychology and how the mind, grows and the being matures through life. And the way we raise our children right now, almost across the board, sets us up to be highly emotionally reactive people and not necessarily critical thinkers. And I mean, and in the truth movement, there's this whole idea that the mind is evil and we shouldn't try to use it and emotions are where it's at. And we should just try to be emotional all the time. And don't get me wrong, I am totally think that emotions are a crucial part of it. Mm-hmm. But without using our mind to think about what we're receiving at an emotional level, our emotions can be easily manipulated. And one thing that I've learned in psychology especially is that your emotions are the energetic expression of what's happening below the surface of your subconscious. And if you're not examining that, then your emotions can be used against you very easily. That's part of what subtle mind control does. Mm-hmm. Is it goes into your unconscious and it takes the things that you refuse to look at or you haven't looked at, and it rearranges them. So then when you expose yourself to something, it may have given you a good feeling before and now it doesn't. You know, especially people who rely purely on emotional discernment. If you're relying only on emotional discernment and you get exposed to propaganda or some type of social engineering, which is everywhere, then your emotions are literally being twisted and distorted. And then that might actually change your conclusions and your discernment process. So it's really important to learn how to use all of our faculties, not just the mind or not just, you know, your heart or your emotions.
Right. And then, of course, raising awareness about where things enter our being, and they come in from just about everywhere, and television and radio and music and movies and the internet are just a few of the sources that reach us, and then there are technological devices that are used that beam mind control all over the planet. And so it does seem that there's kind of a battle going on for our wits.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, and I'd like to think, and I prefer to think, that we eventually win that battle.
Yes, definitely. I think what, as I take the long view and I look back and I look forward, I see that even though the average person may not necessarily be awake in the same way we are, they are being exposed to this information, and there's a lot of equivalent concepts and ideas and modes of being that are becoming popular. So, for example, this idea of energy and people speaking about how they feel energetically and whatnot. 10, 20 years ago, that just even describing things in that way was seen as fairly taboo and woo-woo. And now it's just kind of part of the common lexicon that people are talking about these things. Or, you know, the idea that we're all being mass surveilled by the government, that, you know, before 2013, before Edward Snowden, you know, that was the talk of conspiracy theory and tinfoil hat people. And now that's just a common fact. So, you know, what I'm seeing is that more and more is being revealed. We're actually living in the apocalypse right now, the great revealing, the great unveiling. But because of the nature of free will, nothing is going to be forced. So despite all of the soup of mind control and manipulation that we're constantly in, one thing they can't actually do is they can't really control you in the sense of like controlling your willpower. What they can do is they can influence you and they can mess with you to the point where your willpower gets broken and then you succumb to some plan that they're offering you, some thing that they want you to do, you know. So you see it all the time in advertising, you know, if somebody has a goal to lose weight or to get healthy, you know, that's something that they want to do, but then they get just worn down through their emotions, through through advertisements, through social situations, to the point where they're like, you know what, okay, fine, I'm just going to break this New Year's resolution I had, and I'm going to start eating, you know, McDonald's or whatever it is. And so it's really just a process of work wearing you down, getting to the point where you don't have the willpower, you don't have the discipline to stay on target and stay focused. And that's why I think developing an eclectic body of knowledge, using, not studying not just the things that you want to believe, but venturing into other areas and seeing things from different perspective and then thinking critically about this, is really important, because then you develop your own navigation tools and you can set the ship yourself instead of relying on somebody else to do it for you.
Yes, well, that's a really good point.
Yeah,
a really good point. And, of course, a part of the situation that seems to be occurring is that there has been so much theft of energy, and, I mean, it's a multidimensional robbery going on, and yeah, there's been so much taken from humans that it's becoming necessary for people to have 1, 2, 3 jobs and to really just keep moving just to stay alive. And many people are falling off the merry-go-round because the bankers are spinning the merry-go-round faster and faster so that people will fall off. And but not before they've gotten the last dollar out of you. And so that's kind of a best part of what I see going on. And, I mean, there's a laundry list of things that we could talk about, like transhumanism and nanotechnology and the underground areas that are kept top secret when planes are shot down, if they travel over them, the Denver airport, the CERN. I mean, it just
right.
goes on and on. But
yeah.
I was wondering, since it is hard to find sources that you trust, and I try to share sources that I find are more reliable for me, and mm-hmm. so I just try to spread those sources that I feel I've verified are predominantly accurate and at least trying to be accurate. I thought I would ask you, who, or what are the sources and people that you admire and trust most for information? Are there people that you can, or are there institutions that you can mention that you find are more trustworthy than, say, the mainstream media?
Sure. Let's see. Well, as a general comment on that, I would say when looking for sources of information, I look for people who have integrity. So
mm-hmm.
they're not necessarily presenting their information as this absolute truth that
mm-hmm.
can't be questioned. They're more kind of presenting it as a provisional truth. Like, this is what we think is happening, but it could be subject to change as more information gets discovered.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that rings a lot of integrity, that they're actually seeking the truth, and they recognize that their knowledge is limited. So that some of the people in that realm, Mark Passio has been a really big influence on me. He's got an amazing body of work.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. I found somebody relatively new that's not necessarily in the awakening genre, but as far as like philosophy, psychology, and really an eclectic body of information, always phrased in a way that's towards the individual. So how you can use this for your life is a University of Toronto professor named Dr. Jordan B. Peterson.
Mm.
He has a fantastic body of information. And, you know, if you think that academia has been completely corrupted, and it certainly appears that it has, there's actually one person out there who seems very on board. So he's a really good source. And then there's a whole bunch of other sources that, like Jordan Sather, he's somebody that I have on my blog. I post his videos a lot. He has a very honest approach. He's what I would call a translator. So he'll go and research information, and he'll present it for you in a kind of an easy thumbnail way to understand it. And he's got a really great charismatic personality. So if you're not necessarily academically minded, then that's a really good source of information.
I like Jordan's work quite a lot.
Yeah, he's great. He's great.
Yes, he is.
As far as generally speaking, I'll make a comment that even though there's a lot of sources that I certainly think are very high reputable, like Free Thought Project, Mind Unleashed, Waking Times, Collective Evolution, David Wilcock, he's a very excellent researcher. He usually presents his findings in a way that you can judge it yourself without having to believe him necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really good. So there's a whole bunch of, I'm trying to scour my mind right now to think of all of them, but there's so many out there. As far as law, unfortunately, the source that I used to refer to has been taken offline because there's some big things happening behind the scenes. But Franco Collins and Eucadia, that was a huge resource and still is from my understanding of law and whatnot. So yeah, I would say those are the good sources. And kind of a final comment on sources of information is I would always try to be diverse. So find those sources that you feel like you can trust, but don't trust them blindly.
Right.
Ask hard questions, do your own research, and then do the other opposite thing, which is to go to sources you don't trust and read
right.
their information.
Right, yes. Yes, very wise advice.
So,
What about on the question, I have a personal opinion that that alien life or extraterrestrials have been here for millions of years, and that there have been numerous battles, so many that we just couldn't even mention them all in one night. And so that's my personal opinion. Who are the people that are sharing information about what's going on in that realm in conjunction with the corporations, which it said is mining the moon, the far side of the moon, and which has a breakaway civilization that could, there's hundreds of years more advanced than anything that we have, and still remain secret.
Right. Well, geez, there's an arsenal of data sources there. I would say some of the more reputable researchers are folks like Dr. Michael Sala. Let's see, Richard Dolan, Dr. Joseph Farrell, Geezer Destar, Catherine Austin Fitz. Those are some really good sources. Carrie Cassidy has a volume of information, and actually the whole Project Camelot catalog that she did with Bill Ryan has tons of information in it. Mm-hmm. However, anytime we talk about ufology, you should always be discerning, but be even more discerning with ufology, because it has been well documented that there have been known disinformation agents that have been infused into this field. And, you know, my kind of approach with that whole, with ufology, is to try to listen to as much as I possibly can from a whole range of sources, so I can get a nice eclectic view. Another person that I work closely with, and I feel like he's got a lot of integrity as far as what his message is Corey Good. Corey Good is really very upfront about what he has and hasn't seen. He's an experiencer, he's a whistleblower, but he's also not just trying to sell his story, he's selling a vision, and he's engaging in the process of trying to make the world a better place with us as individuals, and he has a really humble approach. So I really like his general style of presentation and humility and whatnot. And obviously Stephen Greer is a great resource.
Right, I was just thinking of him.
Yeah,
and Linda Moulton Howe.
Yeah, Linda Moulton Howe. Well, let's see. There's just so many. I mean, I could sit here and rattle off names for the next half hour.
Yeah.
But
we'll be thinking of all the people we didn't mention probably when we see Yet off the radio show.
Exactly.
There's so many wonderful ones, actually.
There are. So, and you know, as far as my opinion on extraterrestrials, I think the more and more I study at all levels, especially the legal side and law, the more I realize that, you know, the line is kind of blurred between what we consider extraterrestrial and not. Like, especially when you introduce the idea of breakaway civilizations, there's a lot of sightings that I think we attributed to extraterrestrials in the past, UFO sightings, but they may actually be breakaway civilizations. There may be situations where there are civilizations that are living inside our planet or maybe in the solar system that were once on Earth or were closely associated to Earth. And these beings have been interacting with us, as you say, for millions of years, that, you know, it seems like we've been being guided by various groups for a long time. And you know, the lines between, you know, spiritual beings that maybe have coming from like the creator and then also extraterrestrials really gets blurred. So, and that's a whole other topic that we could certainly get into at some point.
Right. Well, you know, I hate to say this, but we have had such an interesting conversation that we're out of time.
It's already been an hour.
We're going to have to do another show and maybe pick up where we left off or just start wherever we want to, throw a dart or something. Because I really enjoy talking to you, Julian. And, I mean, Justin. I've got Julian on the brain now. And I really appreciate you being on the show tonight. And if there's anything that you want to share in the last 20 or 30 seconds before we have to sign off, then feel free to share that.
Sure. Well, I just want to say thanks. Well, it was a pleasure and an honor to be on your show. And you can find my work at stillnessinthestorm.com. And if you ever wanted to talk to me or engage me, you can engage me through sitsshow@gmail.com. I love hearing from people. And lots of big things happening behind the scenes that I hope to unveil here soon.
Well, great. Keep up the great work, Justin. And we'll be doing another show one of these days soon.
All right. I look forward to it.
All right. Thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Take care. Have a great night. You all on your path.